Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for coming. I find it funny how they give me two choices, for the taller speaker and for the shorter. It's very nice of Romer. Sometimes I go places and it's like, I can't. Okay, so thank you. I want to thank you all for being here this morning. I especially want to thank, and I don't want to embarrass them, but I really feel a need to say this. I have never in my life given a shiur where four generations of my family are sitting in the same room with my oldest daughter, my mom, my grandmother, and even my sister-in-law. So I need to point that out. Thank you. Okay. I want to ask you the following question. I want to start easy. If we look through Tanakh, I hope everyone has a source sheet. There's a pile in the front if you don't. But if you look through Tanakh, and you want to figure out what defines a male hero, what makes a man in Tanakh a hero, I think the question is pretty easy. If he saves us from a war, Moshe takes us out of Mitzrayim, Yeshua helps us destroy Canaan, David kills out Plishtim, okay. They fight a war, they succeed, they save us, great. Or, they are role models in terms of Jewish values and giving over Jewish values. Moshe gives us the Torah, Yeshua reestablishes the covenant. We have a lot of male heroes. But when it comes to female heroes in Tanakh, or heroines, I ask the same question. What creates a heroine in Tanakh? What makes this woman a hero? So if you say, well, she gets involved in war, I can think of two. Devorah, right? Yael kills Sisera in the head. Maybe the lovely woman who throws a rock out of the tower and kills, Abimelech. Not so many. If we're talking about women who give speeches of Jewish values, we also search through, we don't see them so much. Is it a woman who's the leader of other women? What creates a heroine in Tanakh? That's what I don't understand. And is it a woman who is active and loud? Or is it a woman who's more quiet, more passive in the psukim? And what's fascinating to me when I have this question is those are the two models of women that we have in the Megillah. We have Vashti, the defiant, the loud one, and we have Esther, the passive, the more quiet one. So I want to ask you, who's my heroine? Is it Vashti or is it Esther? Is it the one who stands up to the king and says, no, I won't be a spectacle. You can't show me off to all your people just because you want to. Is it Vashti? Or is it Esther marries the king, has relations with the king, and lives with the king, and doesn't stand up to him in terms of refusing to be with him? Is it Esther? Or is it Vashti? I'm confused when I read the psukim. But what I do know is that the Megillah wants us to compare them. And the reason why I know that is if you look source number one, they're introduced to us in almost the same way. In source number one, I gave you the psukim about Vashti and the psukim about Esther that introduces us to them. By Vashti, it tells us what is the reason why the king wants to show her off, where I bolded is what I read. Laharot ha'amim v'hasarim et yafya ki tovat marehi. He wanted to show everyone her beauty because she was really beautiful. The description given to Vashti, she was beautiful, tovat mareh. And the same by Esther, when we first get introduced to Esther, it tells us, yifat toar v'tovat mareh. She was beautiful. And that's why the story goes on the way it does. The two women are described in very similar ways to set the scene of comparison between them. Not only that, not only are they described the same, but the storyline is pretty similar. Vashti is ordered to appear before the king, to listen to what the king's order is for her, as is Esther ordered to come before the king as well, in terms of him deciding if he wants to marry her. Both of them are ordered to appear before the king. But even though we start off the same, their reactions are totally different. Vashti's reaction is strong. Source number two. Vatima ain hamalka Vashti. No way, says Vashti. I'm not going to appear before the king. She refuses to come. And this refusal is a huge deal because the psukim go on again where I bolded. La hamelech levado avta Vashti hamalka. It's not just that she sinned to the king. Ki akol ha-sarim va-kol ha-amim asher b'chol medinos hamalka Achashverosh. She has now rebelled against every officer, every man in the entire country. She is causing an uprisal of women. She is our first women's lib, right, feminist movement, Vashti in Persia. It's amazing. National catastrophe they're worried about. Don't you want to stand up and clap for her? Aren't we excited for her? But yet we call her the villain. Let's look at our assumed heroine, Esther. She's passive. Source 3. Vatilakach Esther at Beit HaMelech. She's taken. Second time, she's taken to the palace. And then second pasuk here, Vatilakach Esther al HaMelech HaChashverosh. She's taken to the king. She doesn't react. She doesn't say no. She doesn't fight. Not only does she not fight, source 4, she's quiet. She doesn't say a word. Lo higida Esther et amavet moladita. She didn't say anything about herself. And the pasuk says it twice. Ein Esther magedet moladita vetama. She doesn't say a word. Not only does she not say a word, if you want to rebel in some ways, you can say no, or you could do what a lot of children do, which is cause a scene, right? Cause some sort of, you know, problem that they say, get her out of here, we don't want her. But what happened, source 5? Vatitav hana'ara be'enav, vatiseah chasa lefanav. She's taken to the palace. She's nice to everyone. She's sweet. She's nice. Second pasuk I gave you here. Lo biksha davar. She could have become a drama queen. Give me makeup. Give me perfume. No, she doesn't ask for a thing. She's quiet. Vati Esther no sechein be'enei kol ra'eh. Everybody falls in love with Esther. All right, you want to be nice to the officers. Okay, you want to be nice to the people so your stay in the palace is pleasant. But now you're in front of the king. This is it, Esther. This is your last shot of getting out of marrying the king of Persia. And what does the pasuk says? Vayahav hamelech es Esther mikol anashim. Why? Vatisachen v'chesed lefanav. He loves her. Why? Because she's nice to him. She's sweet to him. So here we go. We have on the one hand Vashti, who fights for her right to not have to stand in front of the king and all of his officers. And then we have Esther, who's quiet, who's passive, who's sweet. So I ask you again, who is the heroine of the Megillah? When I leave the Megillah, who do I say, that's my role model, that's who I look to, who is it? So before I get back to this question, looking through the eyes of the psukim themselves, I want to look through the eyes of Chazal first. Through the eyes of Chazal, the answer to my question is very clear. Source number 6. The Gemara in Megillah tells us, Vashti Arasha, the Esther Asadekes. There's no question here. Vashti is evil. Vashti is wicked. Esther, she's the righteous one. So you have to ask two questions on this assumption of the Gemara. Question number 1 is, why? What makes Vashti evil? What makes her a Rasha? Why am I going to such an extreme here to call her wicked? I mean, that is a harsh word. Question number 2 is, if Vashti is so evil and so terrible, then why did she say no to Achashverosh? If she's so horrible, shouldn't she have welcomed the opportunity to show herself off in front of the whole kingdom, show her beauty, show her power, and show off herself? Why would she say no? So in order to answer question 1, Chazal has to answer question 2 by explaining that the reason she didn't go was for evil reasons and not for righteous ones. Let's look in the Gemara together, source number 7. Gam Vashti Hamalka Asta Mishte Nashim Beit Hamalchus. The pasuk tells us that the party that Vashti was making, meaning at the same time Achashverosh has his party, Vashti was having a party for women. But it took place in the palace, Beit Malchus. Beit Hanashim Mibayle, says the Gemara, why didn't she do it in her house or a separate house? What's she doing in the palace for? Why is she there? Amar Rava, Shnehem L'davar Averad Nitzkavnu. Because she and Achashverosh, they were on the same page. She completely had the intention to show up to Achashverosh's party and reveal herself. So she was next door because she was waiting for her cue. She was waiting to be called. She wanted to go. So if she wanted to go, says the Gemara, what's the obvious question? Why didn't she go? Continue the Gemara. Now she says no. Wait a second. This is not a righteous woman, according to the Gemara. This is a woman who is lewd. She's immodest. She's a princess. As we know, they both intended her and Achashverosh that she was going to go in front of everyone. So here's the question, my taima lo ate. Why didn't she go? Why did she refuse at the end? Amar Rav Yossi, two answers we all know because our children come home with projects of both. Right? So Amar Rav Yossi Bar Hanina, Milamesha Parcha Batsaras, she got leprosy. And the Matnis and Tana, we learn in a Braita, Bagavriel, Vasala Zanav, she got a tail. Everybody comes home, a nice project, Vashi, she got dots on her face, she got a tail sticking out, comes from two different views in this Gemara. What is the Gemara saying? What the Gemara is saying is that the reason she didn't come is not because she's a tzaddikess who is standing up for women of the world. She didn't come because in that moment she was defending herself. She was being selfish about herself. She looked down and went, oh no, I can't appear like this. This will ruin my reputation. This will hurt me. Something superficial happened to her that caused her not to come. You might ask, why Saras? Why a tail? What's the Gemara coming from? Saras, I believe, is coming from a parallel story that I gave you in Source 8, where we have a King Uzziyahu who got Saras, and the similar words are used, as I bolded here on your sheet, ki nigzar mi beit Hashem, as we say about her, et asher nigzar aleh, it was decreed on them, and the similar words makes us parallel our stories. He got Saras because he did something that was inappropriate for him in his status. He was the king, and he felt that as king, he has the right to give a ketoret, he has the right to give a korban that is only allowed to be given by a kohen. But he's the king, right? So he can do whatever he wants. And the answer back to him is, no, you can't do whatever you want, and therefore, if you think you could do whatever you want, we're going to humble you. By giving you Saras, he never leaves his palace again to learn this lesson of you need to be appropriate to what is expected of you. Here comes Vashti. And she is coming out there, I am all that, I am going to show everybody what I got, and I'm going to make a scene. And God is saying to her, I'm not going to let you do that. That's not appropriate for what you are supposed to do. And he goes and he curses her, according to the Gemara, with Saras. What would be the tail? Tail is simple. What has a tail? An animal. And therefore, what's being understood by this Gemara is she didn't do it for the right reasons. She was acting like an animal. She was acting like somebody who is unhuman. We are showing her true colors. Everything is about her own selfishness, superficiality, her pride. That's why she didn't come. But she fully intended to come. She's an evil person who truly intended on doing this action. I love source number 9 because I found in the Midrash an answer that speaks to me as a Yoetzer Halacha. Lo halcha b'shvil shenitach makor nidasa. Why couldn't she go? Chazal believes she was supposed to go naked, right? She's supposed to go outside with just a crown, as the pasuk says, which means go naked. So what was the issue? What would stop anyone from going naked anywhere? She got a period. She got a period. She couldn't go out naked, and therefore lo haytayu cholal astir nidasa. To me, the Gemara and the Midrash are saying the same idea. The idea is she wanted to go. But God cursed her in some way with some defect to her body that stopped her from being able to go. And therefore the selfishness and the superficiality of Vashti stopped herself from being that person that she really was, which is this horrible person. And therefore whether it's that she really got Saras and a tail, I don't know, that sounds very supernatural, but maybe. Or maybe something natural happened. Her period came in that exact moment. That's an easier one to understand. She didn't go because of her own superficiality. But there's a second answer that comes up in the Gemara. She didn't come not because of herself, but she didn't come because she wanted to give it to her husband. She wanted to get him back. I don't know for what. Maybe he wasn't such a nice guy. He doesn't seem so nice in the Megillah. So maybe he wasn't so nice. And she wanted to publicly embarrass him. And therefore she used this as an opportunity to get back at Ahasuerus, pretending she was going to go, not going in the exact moment, but not only that, embarrassing him further. Says the Gemara, also quoted in Rashi, which I'll show you first, she didn't just say no. She sent back a messenger with a nasty message for Ahasuerus that was read aloud to everybody to publicly embarrass her husband. The pasuk says in source number 10, "V'tima'ein hamalka vashi lavo b'tvar hamelech asher b'yadis harisim." She refused to go. "V'yiksof hamelech ma'od v'chamaso barabo." He was very angry, and the anger burnt in him. So comes along Chazal to want to understand, why was he so mad? Oh, she said no. Why was she so mad? And the answer is because it was more than saying no. She was being cruel. Rashi vayiksof sheshachalo divrei gnai. She insulted him publicly. There are different versions of the insult that she threw at Ahasuerus found in the Midrash. I gave you in source 11 and in source 12. I'll just read you source 11. You can read source 12 on your own. I think as a woman, I don't fully understand the extent of how insulting this comment is, but I do appreciate that it was probably pretty mean. Amar dalkabe kulehai. Why was he so mad? Why did he get so upset? Amar Rava Shachale Bar, she sent him a message. What does she say, Shachale? She sends to him, Bar Ahu Yare De Abba. You, Ahasuerus, you're the stable boy of my father. Whoa, you call the king a stable boy? Whoa. What does she say? Abba Lekabel Alfa Chamre Shasi Lo Rave. My father could drink the amount of wine that 1,000 people could drink, and he never got drunk. The Hahu Gavran, you man over there, how disrespectful. Ishtate b'chamer, you drink a little bit of wine, you're just drunk. You're drunk all over the place. She called him a drunk in a very public setting. Miyad b'chamaso barabo, he gets really mad. She insults him. But it's more than that. Because if you look back at source number 6, the Midrash not only told us she was a Rasha, but it told us she was Bat Benosha Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. She had Yichus. She was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. So when she says, you're nothing like my father, she's not just saying, you're nothing like my father. She's saying, my father deserved the kingdom. My father, he could drink and he didn't get drunk. Why that means he deserved the kingdom? I don't know. But wow, my father was impressive. And you're not so impressive. You think you're all that, you're not that at all. And this is the public statement she is making in front of all of these people at Ahasuerus' party. She stabbed him. She stabbed him in the back. This is not a nice person. The Chazal takes it one step even further than this, source 13. Why, Chazal wants to know, does it specifically tell us by Yom HaShvi'i that all of this happened on the seventh day? Look back in the Gemara again, source 13. Shebimida she'adam modeid ba modedin lo. This is a concept we all know. Mida keneged mida, right? Measure that a man is measured, Hashem will measure it out to him. What does that mean? Melameh shai tavashti harasha meviyah benos Yisrael mafshitin arumos. Whatever it is that Chazal is saying happened to her, must be she deserved it. Why would she deserve such a thing? It must be because she would take Jewish girls, she would make them naked, she would strip them, for Oseh Bahem Malacha B'Shabbos. She made them work on Shabbos naked. Now that is a horrible, horrible thing to do. And therefore, says the Gemara, Mida Keneged Mida Weibolded Zacharis Vashti Et Asher Astah Ve'et Asher Nigzar Aleha. That's why this was decreed on her. Because just like on Shabbos, she stripped naked Jewish women and made them work, so too on Shabbos, she was called to stand naked in front of everyone else and then decreed to be killed when she refused. The punishment is fitting the crime. So I understand now, Chazal. And I even understand that Chazal contrasts this so beautifully with Esther, source 14. We all know this Midrash. At Sheva Hana'arot Amareva, why does it say about her that she had 7 girls working for her? Shaitamo Neba Hamimea Shabbos. She had one working for each day. So she would know when Shabbos was, when the seventh one came. So here we have Vashti on one side, who takes these Jewish girls that are her servants and strips them and degrades them. And here's Esther, who's using them in such a beautiful way to ensure that she keeps Shabbos even in the palace. So I get, according to Chazal, why Vashti is not my hero. I get, according to Chazal, why she's horrible, she's selfish, she's superficial, she is mean, she is cruel. She is not my hero. But I want to go back to the Pshat, because I need to understand this according to the Pshat. Why is it that we don't like Vashti? So in order to do that, what I have to do is compare her to Esther. Because it's not so much in the Pshat about Vashti. But there is something that is true about Chumash and about Navi that occurs all the time. Which is, in order for me to understand certain characters that I don't know so much about, the psukim, or the text, or God, will give us a contrast so that I can learn out by contrasting them. I learn a lot about Esav by contrasting him to Yaakov. I learn a lot about Yishmael by contrasting him to Yishmael. And we do this for women as well. I gave you a very good example in Source 15. Where Devorah, who's one of our main women characters that we know about, she's a judge of the Jewish people. And at the very end, she sings a shira. She sings a song to thank God for her victory. And in the shira, she contrasts herself. But she doesn't contrast herself with the enemy, which is Sisera, which is the general that she was fighting, or Yavin, the king that she was fighting against. No. She contrasts herself to the mother of the general. She calls herself, if you look at our bold in Source 15, she's Aim B'Yisrael, and she has victory over Aim Sisera, the mother of Sisera, who's looking out the window, waiting for her son to come home, saying maybe he's not here yet because he's splitting up the booty and raping all the Jewish women. Hooray for my son. But we all know he's dead because Yael has killed him. She contrasts herself to the other woman of the family. So too here, I believe that we can learn out a lot about Vashti by learning a lot about Esther. So I want to compare and contrast them in three different ways and come up with three answers why Vashti is not my heroine, but Esther is. Way number one is going to be the difference between what I would call personal versus national. If you go back to my premise was Esther is so passive, Esther is so sweet, but we all know that I was really just referring to the first half of the Megillah. In the first half of the Megillah, Esther does not fight when she is taken to the palace. Esther does not fight when she is taken to the king. Esther does not fight when she marries the king. And we hear no fight coming from Esther at all. Because that's about herself. Esther doesn't do anything to stand up for herself. When it comes to herself, okay, she's passive. She lets it happen. But then there's a second half to the Megillah. And the second half of the Megillah is when all of a sudden Esther changes herself. And all of a sudden she goes to the king and demands he comes to her, well, nicely asks if he will come to her party. And then nicely asks if he will come to the next one. And then begs him to save the Jewish people and comes back and begs again to let them fight in Shushan. And then again asks the sages if they could put the Megillah into Tanakh. This is the Esther of the end of the Sefer. And she's not so passive at all. And therefore what you see by Esther is when it's about her personal self, she's very sweet, she's very quiet. But when it's about saving the Jewish people, she will go against that, and she will become active, and she will become loud. If you look at what we talked about with Vashti, Vashti was all about herself. Vashti stood up, I'm not going naked in front of the king. That's about her. Did she think for a moment about how that would affect everybody else? Meaning we look back and say, whoa, feminist movement. But is that really the reaction that was going to go on? Was there going to be a positive effect on the people of her kingdom if she said no to the king? Could she have possibly come up with a compromise that would have been better for everyone as a whole? I think yes. But she didn't care. Because Vashti was about herself. Esther is about everybody but. And you have to see this very strongly. I want to parallel it to two different stories of wives of David. I want to pick on Michal and Bathsheba. Now Michal, for anyone in the room with the name Michal, Michal is wonderful and amazing in the first few stories we hear about Michal. But I'm picking on the last story, which doesn't come out so good. I apologize if that is your name. Michal in some ways parallels to me Vashti. Okay? They both have yichus. Michal is the daughter of Shaul. She has the background of leadership to her. And in the last story we hear about Michal in Source 16, she screams at her husband publicly. David HaMelech is so excited. The Aron, which has not been allowed to be by the Jewish people for a long time, because it was killing them, and it was hidden in somebody's home, is finally being brought to Ir David. It is a celebration, and he dances. She watches him from the window, vatives lo bulibah. She is disgraced by him. How can you put that on me? That's disgraceful for a melech to look that way in front of his people. How can you represent the royal family this way? And she goes outside, vatetze Michal, likras David, and she screams at him. Manech bar hayom melech Yisrael. Oh! Sarcastic. What in honor you have done today, king of the Jewish people. You have revealed yourself not just to the people, but to the maids and the servants. You made a spectacle of yourself. And David turns to her in Pasuk Chaf and says, really? Your father was rejected. God chose me over your father, Shaul. The values that you are now saying to me are not the correct values. The people come first before my honor. I will dance for the Aron because there is a public celebration of the Jewish people going on. And if your values are that like your father, well, your father Shaul was rejected and lost the Melucha, and I got it. So my values are correct. And therefore we see here a woman who is a little bit off in her value system and puts the personal before the communal, yells publicly at her husband and disgraces him a little bit. But this husband, smarter, answers back and puts her in his place. And like Vashti, who is punished for her actions, as we know she is killed, Michal is too. Look at the last pasuk. Ulemichal bat Shaul lo hayala yalad ad yomotah. She never has children until the day she dies. So here we have a similar storyline to our Vashti, someone who puts her personal life first, her views about the royal family first over the nation, as opposed to the second wife, Bathsheba. Bathsheba to me reminds me of Esther. You see, both of them, if you look at my chart that I gave you in source 17, we all know the famous story of Bathsheba. She is bathing and David sees her. Her husband is away at war, Uriah, and she is taken against her will by David. Same words are used, Vatilakach Esther, Esther is taken, Vayikacheha, Bathsheba is taken. It's interesting, they are both described as absolutely beautiful women. Tovat Mareh Ma'od is the description of Bathsheba, similar to Yifat Tovah v'Tovat Mareh of Esther. There is a murder that goes on in both stories. Bathsheba's husband is murdered, as is Bigtan and Teresh, who tries to murder the king. But both of them live with the king, that they are taken, and they end up living with the king. And the relationship ensues, they're more passive-type personalities, until something goes wrong. And then we have a story of Bathsheba at the very end of her story, which is the beginning of Melachim Aleph, where David is kind of old. He's not really figuring out what's going on. And David's sons are fighting over the Malchus. Adoniyahu takes over and says, I'm the new king! And he starts making a celebration as if he is the next king. But we all know Shlomo's supposed to be the next king. So comes Bathsheba to beg her husband David, change what's going on, get up and make a change and say that Shlomo is supposed to be the king. And the storyline is so similar. She comes into his inner chamber. He looks at her and he says, Malach, same word that's used by Ahasuerus, what can I do for you? And she gives over her speech as to how he should not pick Adoniyahu and rather make a public declaration for Shlomo. And of course she convinces David to do so, just like Esther convincing Ahasuerus to remove Haman from his post and put Mordechai there instead. They're very similar. But their stories are different. And the differences make Esther look so incredibly good. You see, Bathsheba is requesting something that's about her family. And she is talking to a king that loves her and that is Jewish and is not going to murder her for this request. Not only that, the Navi at the time, Natan HaNavi, has come to tell Bathsheba what to say, what to do, and while she's talking to David, he even shows up into the room. It's like those tricks, you know? How do we convince someone to do something? We pretend to think that two people want to tell him the same message, right? Sometimes you plan that. So nothing says about Sheva. You're going to go in first, you're going to give a whole speech, and David's going to be like, oh, and then I'm going to walk in as the prophet, say the same speech. He's going to be like, whoa, two of you. Yeah, sure, no problem, anoint Shlomo. And that's exactly what they do. That's just different. Yes, Mordechai tells her to do something, but Esther does it by herself. Esther is not given a plan. She has to come up with it by herself. And of course, Esther risks her life by doing it because Ahasuerus could easily have killed her. personal versus national, the value of Esther of standing up for what is right against her own personality to save the Jewish people, as opposed to Vashti, who is selfish. Second difference, teamwork. Esther has a goal. That's to outsmart the king. That's to save the Jewish people. It's not about herself. It is not about her own personal gain. Therefore, Esther doesn't mind letting somebody in on the plan, talking to other people. You know, a lot of times, or all the time, if you want to do something right, you can't just decide everything for yourself, right? You need a team. You need a team of advisors. You need to ask other people. What do you think? What should I do? What's the plan? Esther had a teammate, and his name was Mordechai. And she listens to Mordechai when he tells her to do stuff. Source 19. Why is she so quiet? Why doesn't she tell anyone who she is? Look at the second half of the pasuk that I now bolded. Ki Mordechai tivah l'Esther lo tagid. Mordechai told her not to say anything. So she was listening. Or the next pasuk, Hasher tivah l'Esther Mordechai. That ma'amar Mordechai Esther osak Hasher haitab abam na'ito. She listened like Mordechai told him. Just like she always listened when she used to live with him. Not only that, when the plan of Bigtan and Teresh is foiled, she could have taken all the credit, source 20, she tells over to the king, B'shem Mordechai, she gives him the credit. She's not looking for her own glory. And finally, in source 21, Mordechai comes to her and says the famous words, Umi Odeh Ma'eh Kazot, he got the machos, get up, do something. Who knows if this is the reason you're the queen? She gets up and she does something. Esther listens. Esther is not all about her own glory. She's not about all about herself. She listens to Mordechai. Not only that, we all know the end of the story, which is Mordechai becomes second in command. He gets the ring of the king. It's not about her. It's about saving the Jewish people and using all the people she needs to get there. Vashti's the opposite. Vashti is about herself. She only talks to herself. Could you imagine for a moment if she had talked to an advisor? Do you think I should say no to the king? Do you think I should have insulted the king? I really can't imagine there would be a single person out there who would have said, you're right, Vashti, don't listen to the king. It'll be okay. He won't murder you. He's not drunk right now. Don't worry. It'll be fine. Of course not. She didn't ask a soul. She did this on her own. She's the opposite of Esther. I want to go back to my parallel stories and see this even stronger. You see, in Tanakh, whenever we outsmart men in Tanakh, which happens a lot, we always use a team of a man and a woman, but a woman is always needed, and she's always actually the key player. If you go to my story of Bathsheba that I just spoke about a minute ago, Natan and Abi and Bathsheba were a team, but Bathsheba goes in first. Bathsheba is the one who sets the scene. Bathsheba is the one who kind of softens up David. And then Natan comes in for the kill to finalize the opinion. But it's really Bathsheba who goes in first. The difference is between that and Esther, in terms of the duality here, just to point out, is that again, as I told you in source 22, my chart, Natan tells her word for word what to say, and Natan shows up to help her out. Esther gets none of those things. Mordechai tells her, go do something. But nowhere in the psukim does he say, I want a party, say I want another party, get Ahasuerus jealous, get none of that. It's up to her to figure out the entire plan herself. But let's go to a second parallel story, which I think is also fun, which is the story of the Isha from Tekoa that we have in Shmuel Bet. You see, here's a story as follows. David, always a David story, David is very angry at his son Avshalom. Maybe good reasons. Avshalom kills his older brother, Amnon, which happens to have been the oldest son of David, probably the one he thought was going to be the next king. Why does he kill Amnon? Because Amnon raped his sister Tamar. Okay, so just to be clear, right? Avshalom and Tamar had the same mother, so they were fully brother and sister. Amnon had a different mother, so she was his half-sister. He rapes her. He pretends he's sick one day, tricks her to coming in the room by herself, and then he rapes her. Avshalom's so mad, so he murders his brother. David now finds out he's mad, so he kicks Avshalom out of here. David kicks him out, won't see him again. But this is not a good situation. So David has a general, and his name is Yoav. And Yoav decides, I need to find a way to get David to bring Avshalom back, which ends up being terrible, by the way, because Avshalom causes a revolt and kicks David out of power. But okay, the idea was, let's bring him back for right now. He's done tshuva, he's sad, right? Let's bring him back in to the kingdom. So he finds this woman. And he says, here's the plan. You are going to pretend. This is all fake. That's what's so funny about the story. You're going to go to David. You're going to start crying. And you're going to say, David, I have one son, and that son killed my other son. And now my relatives want to kill my son. And then I have no sons. And then I have no money. And it'll be horrible. What do I do, David? And of course, Devin answers, I'll protect you. I'll protect your son. Don't worry. She turns on him and she goes, I'm talking about you. I'm talking about you and your son that you kicked out because he killed your other son. And they're, oh, okay. In that story, it's very similar to Esther's story. She comes to the king with a serious problem. The king sees she's sad and says, Malach, what can I do for you, Nebuch, poor girl, right? The similarities are very similar. We're trying to stop the death or the kicking out of Avshalom, like we're stopping to kill out all the Jews in the Purim story. Similar. But the stories are different because, again, if you look at my differences in Source 24, my chart, she is talking about David's problem. She's not talking about the nation's problem. She's asking from a Jewish king who's not going to murder her. He might say, sorry, can't help you, but he's not going to murder her on the spot like Ahasuerus might murder Esther. Again, she's listening and doing what Yoav tells her to do. The pasuk says, Vayasam Yoav et hadvarim bepiah. He told her word for word what to say. And therefore, it works. Esther, she's on her own. She's talking to a non-Jewish king. He could murder her in a second. She really puts her life at risk. But in all these cases, the point is there's a duo. There's a team. You're not just doing it on your own. You're listening to somebody else in order to figure out the best plan. That's Esther. How am I going to do this in the right way? Let me listen to somebody who is wise, somebody that I trust, and let's come up with a plan. So far, two differences between Esther and Vashti. Esther stands up for others, not only herself, and Vashti's only about herself. Number two, Esther's a team player, and she talks to other people. She listens to Mordechai and even gives him credit. Vashti is all about herself. Well, my last and final answer, why Vashti should not be my heroine, is because clearly Esther is smarter. How do I know that Esther is smarter? Because of the ending of the story, Vashti is murdered, and Esther not only lives, she gets to save the Jewish people. So clearly, Esther must be smarter, right? Or else she would also be dead. So you could say one thing. You could say that it is because their personalities are opposites. If you think about it for a second, Vashti publicly embarrasses the king, refuses to come, and disgraces him in public. Now think about how Esther deals with the king. When she wants to talk to him and ask for something, the pasuk tells us she gets dressed in a respectful way. She waits in the courtyard, waiting to be recognized. She doesn't barge in, of course not. And then when he finally lets her in, she waits till he invites her to speak. Malach, what do you want? And then look at the language of Source 25. How have I, every one of our children, should speak with such respect. Im matzati chen ve'enei hamelech. Ve'im al hamelech tov. Latet et sheilati ve'lasot et kashati. Please, king, if it finds favor in your eyes, to do what I ask and to listen to my request. Please, king. And then she asks for something so small, come to a party. She's so respectful. She's so sweet. The opposite of Vashti in so many ways. Now, you can easily say that's Esther's personality. As we saw earlier, and I gave it to her again in Source 26, everybody liked her, so she was just a nice person. She's the opposite of Vashti, and therefore that was just a better persona to have with Ahasuerus. Or maybe there's a second option, which I'd like to learn out from actually this past week's Parsha. There's a famous question that we ask about Aaron by Chaita Egel, who just read this weekend. Why did he build the Egel? Look at the story. He builds it. He builds the Mizbeah. Why would he do such a thing? You see, Chazal asks that question, and they give us a very interesting answer in Rashi. Look at Source 27. The pasuk says, Vayar Aaron, he saw something, but it doesn't tell us what he saw. So comes Rashi and says, here's a nice medrash to tell us what he saw. Ra'achor benachoto shehaya mechicham v'arguhu. Chor disappears in the psukim. He's gone. He was there in the beginning, supposed to be in charge, and then we never see him again. So comes the Chazal to tell us, where did he go? He stood up. He said, do not build that egel. Are you crazy? And they murdered him on the spot. So Aaron sees this and says, well, that's not a good plan. That's not going to work. If I'm dead, who's stopping them from doing other things? So he came up with a new plan. Okay, I'll delay. I'll make it slow. I'll fashion it so carefully so it takes me all day, right? Tomorrow. That was Aaron's reaction. He looked at what happened to someone else that got them murdered and got smart. Let's look at Esther that way. Maybe she was as sweet as could be. Maybe she was as respectful person as could be. Or maybe she was that. But she learned. Well, what did Vashti do to get herself killed? She was chutzpahdik, she was rude, she disobeyed the king. All right, I'm going to be the extreme opposite. I am going to be as nice as can be to try to get something out of the king. What I always find fascinating is that everybody likes to parallel the stories of Esther and Yosef together, which is my chart in source 28 that I'll fly through quickly. I have 5 minutes today. But why I find that parallel so strange is that they have opposite personalities in the psukim. Esther is quiet and passive and sweet and doesn't seem to want glory for herself. Yosef is the, I'm wearing the fancy coat, I'm dreaming, I'm going to rule my brothers. They're opposites. Their dreams are opposites. Their personalities are opposites. Why is their story the same? What do I mean they're the same? Fly through my chart, source 28. They both get taken to a king's house and are alone in the palace. Both lose their parents, right? As we know, Yosef's mother dies and he's taken away from his father. Esther tells us in the pasuk that her parents are dead. They are both described with the same language, just one's in feminine and one's in masculine. There are so many people in Tanakh who are called beautiful. But the only three that have this exact same language is Yosef, Rachel, and of course, Esther. It says about him, Yosef Yafet Tawav Yafet Mared, the masculine version of how we call Esther. They are both described as this charming personality that everybody seems to fall in love with them. They both get taken by force. Yosef is sold down to Egypt. She is taken by the king. They're both jailed to some extent. He's jailed by Potiphar. And she's jailed in the house of the women waiting to be seen by the king. I mean, she couldn't go anywhere. She was basically in jail. Jail of makeup and perfume, it sounds like. But that's pretty bad, I think. Anyway, they both have a piece of information that is so important that gets forgotten in their story and remembered at a key moment that changes the whole story. Yosef telling Sarah Mashkin, get me out of jail, remembering it when the king does not know the interpretation of the dream. Oh, there's that guy in jail who knows how to interpret a dream. And also in the Esther story, Mordechai saving the king from Bigtan and Teresh, which is remembered that night when Haman's in the background and he says to Haman to go take Mordechai and walk around saying, Kachai, Sa'ish is what we do to someone who helps the king. Both of them are able to stand up to the king of their time, which is totally impossible that they should be able to do this, and manipulate the king to save the Jewish people. And both of them become second to king or queen, have tremendous power at the end of the story. But they're different. So why is their story the same? They both use charm. They're both beautiful. I get that. But why are they the same? And I think that if you look at the story of Esther, and if you look at the story of Yosef, they both undergo a transition. You see, Esther becomes a little more like Yosef, and Yosef becomes a little bit more like Esther. Esther in the beginning is quiet and passive, and she's got to come out of that shell, realize she's important, and she can save the Jewish people. And she has to figure out how she can find that in herself to actually save them. And it's a transition for her, but she still does it in her way. Please come to my party. If the king is good, come to my other party. She does it in such a sweet, passive, beautiful way. That's the Esther way, but she saves the Jewish people. Yosef starts out loud, starts out the tattletale, starts out the show-off, but he learns. And when we get to Potiphar's house, all of a sudden he realizes how to not step on Potiphar's toes. Or maybe he doesn't, because then he gets thrown in jail. But then he gets another turn in jail, and he gets a final turn with Paro. He learns how to not pull himself to the top in a way that scares everybody else off, to the extent that the king, Paro, trusts him so much that he's able to manipulate Paro to give us Goshen, which the Pasuk says in Source 30 is the Meitav Haaretz, one of the nicest places in Mitzrayim. He's able to get us food for free. Mitzrayim's paying all their money away, and we're just eating up. So that, Vayifru Vayabu Ma'od, we become many, we are thriving. The Egyptian people are dying, and they're starving, and we are doing just fine. How did he get that? Because Yosef learned to be more like Esther. Don't make yourself a contender for the top. Be more sanua, be a little more passive-aggressive here. And say, oh, I'm under you, I'm not going for your power. And all of a sudden, he can get everything he wants out of King Kai. So I ask you now, who is the heroine of the Megillah? Is it Vashti, who is selfish and only helps herself? Or is it Esther, who's the opposite and does everything to save the Jewish people, but not herself? Is it Vashti, who is egotistical and doesn't help anybody or turn to anyone for advice? Or is it Esther, who turns to Mordechai for help and even gives him credit? Is it Vashti, who's an aggressive personality? Or is it Esther, who is respectful, passive, and sweet? In the pshat of the psukim, Vashti we can see as superficial, egotistical, selfish, aggressive, and nasty. Esther, kind, respectful, a team player, strong, intelligent, and completely unselfish. I think when you finish, you realize, without question, Esther saves the Jewish people and is the true heroine of the Megillah. Thank you very much. Thank you.